you. Okay, we're going to do Senate Bill 649 next. This bill has been heard. It exempts cab drivers under the workers' compensation law. Were there amendments for this bill?
I don't believe so.
Yeah.
Yes, this is a good one.
Good bill.
Madam Chair.
Senator Howe?
Are we in the work session?
Yes.
I would move 649 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
All right. And now, as I understand it, does this, before I accept your motion, Senator Howe, were there amendments proposed for this, or is this ready to go as? Okay.
It's ready to go, yeah.
Okay. Senator Howe moves Senate Bill 649 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, will clerk call the roll?
Senator Hamm?
Aye.
Senator Howe?
Aye.
Senator Durensteig?
Aye.
Senator McCord?
Aye.
Senator Otto?
Aye.
Senator Starkovich?
Aye.
Senator Hendrickson?
Aye. So ordered. Have we held a hearing on Senate Bill 97?
Yes.
Yeah.
That was last week. All right, this bill had been requested the Law Improvement Committee to get our worker compensation laws into conformance with case law.
This is 97?
Yes, Senate Bill 97. This allows, if a worker has conscientious or religious objections to a certain type of medical treatment, that they can't deny their worker compensation payments if they have a bona fide worker refusal to undergo medical or surgical treatment if it's based on conscientious or religious.
I'd like to move Senate Bill 97 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
All right. Senator McCoy moves Senate Bill 97 to the floor with a due pass. Senator Howe?
Madam Chairman, in the hearing, there was some discussion about the removal of the last sentence saying the insurance carrier may pay for treatment by prayer or spiritual means.
Madam Chair, I might note that there is a record letter in your files from a Mr. Hazlett, representative for the Christian Science Church, I believe is involved in the original statute and also the case. He is in the audience. May have some background in that point.
Well, the statute as it exists today, the current law today, allows the employer to pay for treatment by prayer or spiritual means. It's not mandatory, it's optional, and so we're only keeping the same language, and it doesn't mandate that the insurer pay for it, but it allows the insurer to pay for it.
It's bona fide.
So it's, I guess, in discussion, I would say I would not support an amendment to delete that because it's the same language that's in the existing law, and it doesn't mandate the payments. It simply allows what Mr. Hazlett's letter says.
Question?
Is it okay?
Mm-hmm.
Will clerk call the roll?
Senator Hamm?
Aye.
Senator
Howe? Aye.
Senator Durensteig?
Aye.
Senator McCord?
Aye.
Senator Otto?
Aye.
Senator Starkovich?
Aye.
Senator Hendrickson?
Aye. Be so ordered. Okay. Senate Bill 256. So we heard Senate Bill 773 last night. There's discussions apparently going on with the medical director of worker comp trying to work out a problem that's developed there. So we're going to...
We will not work on it this morning.
I don't believe we'll work on it this morning. We'll see how we've got. I want to try and see if we can move these ones where they're pretty much ready to go.
Which one are we passing?
I'd like to consider 256. Senate Bill 256. Actually, I had some. This may not be the time to take this up either because I had some questions about this bill. This was one of the ones that we heard in the evening time. And this bill, we have this antiquated law in which derives historically from when we had just a two-way or a one-way system, when we just had the state fund. And the state fund provided that the attorney general would go in and represent the employer if there was an issue on coverage. And so this has been on the books since the beginning of the worker compensation statutes in Oregon, 50 or 60 years. And the Attorney General is coming in now to change language so that they will appear on behalf of the director in those cases. Well, the testimony was, in most instances, as I, unless I recall the testimony, you may be corrected, one of the committee members that were there, these employers always have their own lawyers anyway. And so I question the continued validity of this concept, which was based on the fact that we only, in the old days, when we just had one fund, and of course the Attorney General would represent the employer on behalf of the fund. What I had suggested was simply repealing the entire law. I think we had asked the Attorney General that was here. What they want to do is, obviously, it's in Congress for the Attorney General to be coming in representing a private employer. And so what the Attorney General with this bill wanted to do was to say that they're representing the department and defend the legislative purpose. But I guess what I I really question the...
If doing...
Well, what I...
Why we don't just repeal...
Just repeal the... Repeal having anything about having the Attorney General come in on those cases. It seems... Well, it would be a cost-saving bill. We could find out how much money they're expending. It's not a great deal because they don't... maybe we can get some committee discussion. What I would like to do is use this bill as a vehicle simply to repeal that whole portion of law.
Well, do we have amendments here to do that?
No.
Before I did that, I wanted to find out if there was any interest on the part of the committee in doing that.
Have we heard from the AG's office?
Well, is someone here from the AG today? Oh,
yes.
Would you like to come forward, please? And identify yourself from the record, for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jim Russell. I am an Assistant Attorney General with the Department of Justice. I was the representative of the Department of Justice that testified at the evening hearing previously.
I know you were going to go. You actually don't handle these cases personally. Someone in your trial division or the appellate division handles them. Is that you were? I think you were going to try to get a little more information for us about how much work they actually are involved in doing.
Yes, Madam Chair, I've done some checking. Cases that have been transferred, in effect, to the Department of Justice to represent employers have been relatively few over recent years. And they're generally settled with a minimal amount of attorney involvement, generally by some agreed or stipulated dismissals or by motions for summary judgment, because under the statute, the only thing the Attorney General can do is raise the defense that the sole and exclusive remedy is under the workers' compensation law, and therefore the employee does not have a right to come in and allege a civil tort action such as negligence. There are exceptions if the employer deliberately intended to injure the worker. There are those exceptions, and of course, if it appears that those exceptions apply, the Attorney General's office would not be representing the employer in those cases, because it, by definition, would not be a sole and exclusive remedy. Very few cases in recent years. 1980, there was one case settled for or resolved with a total attorney fee of $162.80. 1981, there was
one.
You
mean that's what you billed the department? Or that's what the
Attorney
General billed the
yes.
Department?
Okay. Yes. 1981, there was one case for $450.60 of attorney fees. 1982, I believe the case is still open. There's been $3,375.24 that year. In 1982, there were two cases Both cases totaled $1,330.49 in attorney fees.
Did you get a chance to consult with the Attorney General about how he'd feel if we simply repeal this and get rid of this duty altogether? It seems more like sort of a little nuisance kind of thing.
There, as far as the caseload is concerned, Madam Chair, it's minimal as far as our office is concerned. I did run across one case that gave me pause. That was a situation where a dry cleaning establishment in Lebanon did not have an attorney and requested assistance through its insurer, SAFE.
Why is SAFE an attorney? What are they paying their premiums for?
As a matter of fact, Madam Chair, most of these cases are handled, SAFE cases are handled directly by SAFE. They have in their insurance coverage what's called Coverage B, which is in effect a SAFE defend and hold harmless clause.
But I guess what I'm saying, Mr. Russell, about two a month
go to the trial division.
Okay, but Mr. Russell, what I'm saying is I don't think it's appropriate that the Attorney General be acting as an attorney for employers. I think the original purpose of the statute was when we had a single fund, and 60 years ago when people didn't understand that they could no longer sue in negligence, I think it may have served some function. I think 60 years later, it's a little hard to justify, particularly when we've gone into a three-way system where there's insurance companies and insurance company lawyers for employers, having this provision in the law.
Madam Chair, I have checked our files back to 1972, and I did not come across a single case in which there was an employer that didn't have insurance or whether liability or workers' comp or otherwise did not have an attorney.
Okay, that was seeking. Okay. But you haven't had a chance to talk to the Attorney General, or do they have a position if we simply repealed that portion of the statute?
I have not talked to the Attorney General directly on this, Madam Chair. I have talked to the individual who is dealing with the legislative concepts. It's his position that the Attorney General's office is not going to be concerned if this is repealed. We have checked with SAFE Corporation, we have checked with the Trial Division, and with the Workers' Comp Department that that in effect makes the request to the Attorney General, and a repeal would cause no great problems with any of these elements in the process.
Okay. Thank you very much. We appreciate you taking the time. What the chair would like to move in concept is that this bill be amended to repeal that portion of law which requires the Attorney General appearance as it is currently. And then we'll have to get, if there's...
Yeah, I'm sure that would be this repeal.
Okay, is that... Okay. Will that take care of the whole... Let me just check with Mr. Russell. We're going to... What I'd move then is that we repeal Chapter ORS 656-384. Will that take care of the entire issue then with respect to...
And that's the portion
of statute that has the Attorney General come in if there's a lawsuit for personal injury.
Madam Chair, there is another statute that...
Well, I guess what I'd like to do is just do this in concept and then come back with the...
I'm moving in concept.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay, is there any objection to that amendment?
There's no problem there.
Okay. What I'm going to do then is ask the staff to draft that up for us before we send it out for a final.
Okay.
So, thank you very much. And maybe you could work with Cheyenne and make sure we pick up the other portions of law that will need to be also repealed.
Yes, there is one other statute, 656-624,
okay,
which is for payment of the litigation expenses.
Okay, fine.
Madam Chair, since the hour is late, if the committee is supportive, I'd like to move it conceptually to the floor if it's just a simple repeal and everyone's in agreement.
Okay, well...
He's just given us the second statute.
So...
That's okay. I just... Cheyenne's going to move it up.
Okay. Mr. Russell said there's just two that we have to repeal.
There's one.
So, I'll accept Senator Handy's motion, and then if Cheyenne finds out and we research and talk with Mr. Russell that there's something more we need to do, we can bring it back. Otherwise, I think it's ready to go to the floor. Okay, we'll quick call the roll, and this is to send Senate Bill 256 to the floor as amended, which repeals two portions of the statute then that currently require the Attorney General to appear in these kind of cases.
I won't appear.
Madam Chair, is this with the understanding that we run it through Legislative Council before it goes to the floor?
Oh, yes. Yeah, and then, but...
And if there is a problem, we...
If it's a problem, right. We'll bring it back. Right. But it's getting that time in the session that we need to move. Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Handy?
Aye.
Senator Howe?
Aye.
Senator Durst?
Aye.
Senator McCoy?
Aye.
Senator Otto?
Aye.
Senator Starkovich?
Aye.
Senator Henderson?
Aye. So ordered. Okay. We've lightened the load of the Attorney General just a little bit. Maybe we can free them up to give some more attorney service to some of the other agencies. I'd like to take up Senate Bill 444, which we heard last night. We have a hand engrossed. We had amendments that the proponents of the bill brought to us, which I think really were a good improvement on the original bill. This bill, we thought we had clarified last session on when attorney fees are due in appeals, and this bill makes clarifications with respect to when attorneys fees on appeal can be claimed, and I wonder what circumstances they can be claimed, and it allows in those situations if someone has to appeal because the insurer or the self-insurer refuses to pay a claim or unreasonably resists the payment, that they can get attorney's fees if they must initiate it, or if they have to initiate a fee to reinstate a previous award that they have gotten.
Okay,
so,
I'd like to move
the amendments.
I'd like to move the amendments. Senate Bill 441-1 of 51085.
All right, Senator McCoy moves LC Draft 444-1 dated 51085. Is there any objection to that amendment? Okay, hearing none, that'll be so ordered.
I move the bill as amended to the floor with the due pass.
Senator McCoy moves Senate Bill 444 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, will clerk call the roll?
Senator Handy?
Aye.
Senator Howe?
Aye.
Senator Durnstead?
Aye.
Senator McCoy?
Aye.
Senator Otto?
Aye.
Senator Starkovich?
Aye.
Senator Henderson?
Aye. Okay, that'll be so ordered. We took care of 165 last night. That's out. We're holding on to 166. We've got Senate Bill 449. And that was the bill that was requested by FLCAO to deal with. It's kind of a parallel situation we dealt with on Senate Bill 56. It's dealing with the situation where you've got a injured worker and there's been a labor dispute at their place of employment. This is a bill where if the attending physician has, new language would be in the bold face there, if the attending physician has approved the worker's return to the worker's regular employment and there's a labor dispute at the place of the employment, the worker may refuse to return to that employment without any loss of benefits. We had testimony from Del Ricks, and their contention is they don't want their people to have to be strike breakers, and they're faced now with either having to do that or lose their benefits, and they feel that that's an unfair situation.
Well, I'd like to move the bill, 449.
Okay. I'll take Senator McCoy's motion to move Senate Bill 449 to the floor of the Duke House. Is there a discussion?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Hanby and then Senator Howe.
In the testimony offered last night, and my apologies for not being here, it states that many workers, injured workers that have become medically able to return to work. Many. Was there a number given?
Well, this wasn't last night. This was a daytime hearing that we had on April 23rd. I don't recall the numbers that were discussed. They apparently had a situation in their local that they had a situation where they brought, in fact, some people that had the problem testified. Some people that had been on a Steve Sokot is here. Maybe he could come and enlighten us. We also have a case in here, Richard Gill, who I think also came and testified, who actually was a person. And there, it's going through the Worker Compensation Board now. They're arguing that they shouldn't be forced to have to break strikes in order to get benefits.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Steve Sokotch, Oregon AFL-CIO. To answer your question, Senator Hamby, in this one particular instance that involved Steelworkers Local 3010, as I understand from Mr. Ricks over a couple months period of time with that particular local, it involved anywhere from 8 to 12 people in this particular circumstance. But there have been others whose number is not specifically certain at this time. It came to a head simply because it was such an issue in this one particular situation. It became quite a problem.
Well, do you have any idea of the magnitude we're talking about in terms of numbers here?
Beyond this situation, Senator Hendrickson, no, not specifically. I can certainly provide that information to the committee after talking with Mr. Ricks.
Okay. Any further questions? Senator Howe, could you have a comment or a question?
Well, other than, to talk about the philosophy behind the bill, that if a person has been deemed fit to go back to work and he chooses because of a labor dispute not to, he is financially involved in that labor dispute. And to carry his benefits after he's been declared suitable to go back to work, and the election is himself, and the benefits are himself. Again, I think that we're going beyond the concept of workman's compensation here and trying to put some kind of strike benefit in that situation over to a person that has been declared eligible to return to the workforce. We're putting it over into a category that I really don't feel that's an area that we should be going to.
Well, I want to just refer to the Gill case here, in which the referee at least said that they were looking at in ORS 657-195, the issue becomes what is reasonable when you're denying benefits. And it appears that they found it was unreasonable to deny benefits because the person didn't want to be a strike break.
Life might be at stake.
They cite Chapter 657-195, which says that notwithstanding any other provision of the statute, no work is deemed suitable and benefits shall not be denied under this chapter to anyone otherwise eligible for refusing to accept work under one of the following conditions: if the position offered is vacant due to a strike, lockout, or other labor dispute. So I think this is merely a restatement of the law that you can't use the worker compensation system to get involved in a labor dispute. They certainly could refer them to other work. They could refer them to other jobs. to get them
well, it's still an election of the person.
Well, yeah, it's an election. They don't want to be a strike break. Right.
Well,
if they're a union member,
still financially involved
in
the strike.
It doesn't mean they're going to be involved in the strike. They may want to get a job someplace else. They're willing to take a job someplace else.
They can get
a
job somewhere else.
You don't want to force them into a business.
It only has the issue to do with getting a job to where that particular labor dispute, you know, is going on.
Right. They don't want to have to go to where there's a labor dispute.
I understand.
They'll say, I'll take a job someplace else. They're not on the picket line. They're not involved. They don't want to cross the picket line. They'll take a job someplace else.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Starkey.
The irony that the current law allows is that a worker is injured in a workplace. And the employer, if then a labor dispute takes place after the injury and before the worker comes back and is eligible to go to work again. The irony is that the employer is able to take advantage, essentially, mm-hmm. of the employer's injury, of the employee's injury in the workplace by setting that member of the bargaining unit apart from those workers that were not injured and saying that you either come back to work, cross your own picket line, or you walk. And that's the irony. You're setting one member of the bargaining unit against the others because that worker was injured in the workplace. It seems a very bitter irony.
I agree. Is there any further discussion on Senator McCoy's motion? If not, will the clerk call the roll?
Senator Hamby?
No.
Senator House?
No.
Senator Durst?
What are we voting on?
Senate Bill 449.
No.
Senator McCoy?
Aye.
Senator Otto?
Aye.
Senator Stockbridge?
Aye.
Senator Henderson?
Aye. So ordered.
Good.
Okay, we're going to move to House Bill 2132. And we have some amendments that have been offered by the Worker Comp Board, and would you like to hear about those?
Yeah.
Senator Otto.
On that last?
Madam Chair.
No, okay, I'm all right. I was sending it to the floor on a minute.
Yeah.
I'm okay.
Good vote. Good bill should pass.
Amendments.
Madam Chair.
Senator
McCoy?
Well,
Senator Hamby, did you?
It's a Senate Bill 449. I wish we could have drafted that language in a more positive aspect, because the last thing I want to see is any employer to use it in the particular instance that Senator Starkovich spoke to. And but,
well, that's how they are using it. I mean, that's the Gill opinion. If you might want to read the Gill opinion. I mean, you can draw your own conclusion. That's the conclusion I draw.
The question is, if they're deemed, the disability no longer hampers their ability to return to work, that's the question. Or do they, at least the way I understand it, and if they refuse to cross the picket line, of course, then the benefits, the medical benefits, the disability benefits, et cetera, continue.
No, if they refuse to cross the picket line, the bill is to correct a situation where, in some instances, if a person, after declared medically stationary, they have to go and look for work, and that's fine. Everybody agrees on that.
Yes, right.
But they were being told that then the employer would call them to cross the picket line and become a strike breaker.
Well,
and
no.
So if they refuse to do that, then they had their benefits cut off.
But the question is
here. The benefits are already cut off. The minute they're declared medically stationary, when they go to work, their benefits are cut off. Now, this would extend their benefits.
See, that's...
That's the problem.
Yeah.
No, I don't think that's...
It's without loss of any benefits provided by this chapter. And
it says that if the rest of the existing statute says that the attending physicians do not approve the worker's return to regular employment, they must continue to make temporary total disability payments until termination of such payments is authorized, examination, medical reports submitted to the evaluation division. And so if the attending physician has approved the person's return to work and there is a labor dispute at the place of employment,
so in other
the
words,
worker may refuse.
They continue to enjoy their disability comp payments, correct? Even though they have been deemed well enough to go back to work. Now, that tells me something different than what I thought was the real focus of the problem. I don't want employers using it as a...
Okay, well, let me...
That's where I'm coming.
I'd like to look at that a little more.
Okay, Senator Starkovich wants to move to reconsider the vote by which Senate Bill 449 was taken. Is there any objection? Okay, hearing none, that'll be so ordered. Steve, do you want to come up here a second? That's right, just stay there. You can just stay there. Do you want to...
Is there anyone here, Madam Chair, from workers' comp?
Is there anyone here from the department that wants to comment on that?
449? Well, reconsidering it, because I don't want it to be used.
Well, let's get the other side of the story up here, because it produces some real problems with double gates. You know, where you've got... You're seeing any labor dispute.
Well, she's got a different problem, which I think is... She's wondering if this actually extends benefits beyond the time they would normally be extended. In other words, it doesn't just... So I guess the issue, Steve, is, and Larry maybe can address it also, is reading this language. If the normal situation would be if they're medically stationary and they've been told they can go back to work, then the benefits are terminated, right?
That's correct.
Okay, so what does, in your opinion, what does this language do if... Would this reestablish their benefits if, in that situation, if the employer, or is it other types of benefits that they might be entitled to?
Larry.
Of course, Madam Chair, Larry Young, Workers' Compensation Department. First, there's a little bit of confusion. When a physician releases the worker to return to regular work, notwithstanding whether the worker is medically stationary, time loss benefits discontinue at that point in time.
Yes.
Okay.
His claim is not determined as to extend disability until his condition is medically stationary.
Okay.
But when the worker...